Chapter 31. Composed in admirable gravity. All this was set off by such a glorious mass of fair hair, by a complexion so marvelous, by such a grace of expression, that General Dubert really never found the opportunity to examine with sufficient detachment the lofty exigencies of his pride. In fact, he became shy of that line of inquiry since it had led once or twice to a crisis of solitary passion in which it was borne upon him that he loved her enough to kill her rather than lose her. From such passages, not unknown to men of 40, he would come out broken, exhausted, remorseful, a little dismayed. He derived, however, considerable comfort from the quietest practice of sitting now and then half the night by an open window and meditating upon the wonder of her existence, like a believer lost in the mystic contemplation of his faith. It must not be supposed that all these variations of his inward state were made manifest to the world. General D. Hubert found no difficulty in appearing wreathed in smiles, because, in fact, he was very happy. He followed the established rules of his conditian, sending over flowers from his sister's garden and hothouses early every morning, and a little later following himself to lunch with his intended, her mother, and her emigre uncle. The middle of the day was spent in strolling or sitting in the shade. A watchful deference, trembling on the verge of tenderness, was the note of their intercourse on his side, with a playful turn of the phrase concealing the profound trouble of his whole being caused by her inaccessible nearness. Late in the afternoon, General D. Hubert walked home between the fields of vines, sometimes intensely miserable, sometimes supremely happy, sometimes pensively sad, but always feeling a special intensity of existence, that elation common to artists, poets, and lovers, to men haunted by a great passion, a noble thought, or a new vision of plastic beauty. The outward world at that time did not exist with any special distinctness for General Dubert. One evening, however, crossing a ridge from which he could see both houses, General Dubert became aware of two figures far down the road. The day had been divine. The festal decoration of the inflamed sky lent a gentle glow to the sober tints of the southern land. The gray rocks, the brown fields, the purple, undulating distances harmonized in luminous accord, exhaled already the scents of the evening. The two figures down the road presented themselves like two rigid and wooden silhouettes, all black on the ribbon of white dust. General Dubert made out the long, straight, military capotes buttoned closely right up to the black stocks, the cocked hats, the lean, carven, brown countenances, old soldiers' veils, mustaches. The taller of the two had a black patch over one eye, the other's hard, dry countenance presented some bizarre, disquieting peculiarity, which on nearer approach proved to be the absence of the tip of the nose. Lifting their hands with one movement to salute the slightly lame civilian walking with a thick stick, they inquired for the house where the General Baron Dubert lived, and what was the best way to get speech with him quietly. "If you think this quiet enough," said General Dubert, looking round at the vine fields, framed in purple lines, and dominated by the nest of gray and drab walls of a village clustering around the top of a conical hill, so that the blunt church tower seemed but the shape of a crowning rock, "if you think this spot quiet enough, you can speak to him at once. And I beg you, comrades, to speak openly, with perfect confidence." They stepped back at this, and raised again their hands to their hats with marked ceremoniousness. Then the one with the chipped nose, speaking for both, remarked that the matter was confidential enough, and to be arranged discreetly. Their general quarters were established in that village over there, where the infernal clodhoppers dam their false, royalist hearts. Looked remarkably cross-eyed at three unassuming military men. For the present he should only ask for the name of General Dubert's friends. "What friends?" said the astonished General Dubert, completely off the track. I am staying with my brother-in-law over there." "Well, he will do for one," said the chipped veteran. "We're the friends of General Farad," interjected the other, who had kept silent till then, only glowering with his one eye at the man who had never loved the Emperor. That was something to look at. For even the gold-laced Judases who had sold him to the English, the marshals and princes, had loved him at some time or other. But this man had never loved the Emperor. General Farad had said so distinctly. General Dubert felt an inward blow in his chest. For an infinitesimal fraction of a second it was as if the spinning of the earth had become perceptible with an awful, slight rustle in the eternal stillness of space. But this noise of blood in his ears passed off at once. Involuntarily he murmured, "Farad. I had forgotten his existence. He's existing at present, very uncomfortably, it is true, in the infamous inn of that nest of savages up there," said the one-eyed cuirassier, dryly. "We arrived in your parts an hour ago on post horses. He's awaiting our return with impatience. There is hurry, you know. The general has broken the ministerial order to obtain from you the satisfaction he's entitled to by the laws of honor, and naturally he's anxious to have it all over before the gendarmerie gets on his scent." The other elucidated the idea a little further. "Gee, get back on the quiet, you understand? Fit. No one the wiser. We have broken out to. Your friend the king would be glad to cut off our scurvy pittances at the first chance. It's a risk. But honor before everything." General Dubert had recovered his powers of speech. "So you come here like this along the road, to invite me to a throat-cutting match with it that." A laughing sort of rage took possession of him. "Ha! Ha! Ha! Ha!" His fists on his hips, he roared without restraint, while they stood before him lank and straight, as though they had been shot up with a snap through a trapdoor in the ground. Only 24 months ago the monsters of Europe, they had already the air of antique ghosts, they seemed less substantial in their faded coats than their own narrow shadows falling so black across the white road. The military and grotesque shadows of 20 years of war and conquests. They had an outlandish appearance of two imperturbable bonzes of the religion of the sword. And General Dubert, also one of the ex-masters of Europe, laughed at these serious phantoms standing in his way. Said one, indicating the laughing general with a jerk of the head colon, "A merry companion, that. There are some of us that haven't smiled from the day the other went away," remarked his comrade. A violent impulse to set upon and beat those unsubstantial wraiths to the ground frightened General Dubert. He ceased laughing suddenly. His desire now was to get rid of them, to get them away from his sight quickly, before he lost control of himself. He wondered at the fury he felt rising in his breast. But he had no time to look into that peculiarity just then. "I understand your wish to be done with me as quickly as possible. Don't let us waste time in empty ceremonies. Do you see that wood there at the foot of that slope?" "Yes, the wood of pines. Let us meet there tomorrow at sunrise. I will bring with me my sword or my pistols, or both if you like." The seconds of General Farad looked at each other. "Pistols, General," said the cuirassier. "So be it. Au revoir tomorrow morning. Till then let me advise you to keep close, if you don't want the gendarmerie making inquiries about you before it gets dark. Strangers are rare in this part of the country." They saluted in silence. General Dubert, turning his back on their retreating forms, stood still in the middle of the road for a long time, biting his lower lip and looking on the ground. Then he began to walk straight before him, thus retracing his steps till he found himself before the park gate of his intendant's house. Dusk had fallen. Motionless he stared through the bars at the front of the house, gleaming clear beyond the thickets and trees. Footsteps scrunched on the gravel, and presently a tall stooping shape emerged from the lateral alley following the inner side of the park wall. La Chevalier de Valmasigue, uncle of the adorable Adele, ex-brigadier in the army of the princes, bookbinder in Altona, afterwards shoemaker with a great reputation for elegance in the fit of ladies' shoes, in another small German town, wore silk stockings on his lean shanks, low shoes with silver buckles, a brocaded waistcoat, a long-skirted coat, a lefrancaise, covered loosely his thin, bowed back. A small three-cornered hat rested on a lot of powdered hair, tied in a queue. Monsieur Le Chevalier, called General Dubert, softly. What? You here again, mon ami? Have you forgotten something? By heavens! That's just it. I have forgotten something. I am come to tell you of it. No outside. Behind this wall. It's too ghastly a thing to be let in at all where she lives. The Chevalier came out at once with that benevolent resignation some old people display towards the fugue of youth. Older by a quarter of a century than General Dubert, he looked upon him in the secret of his heart as a rather troublesome youngster in love. He had heard his enigmatical words very well, but attached no undue importance to what a mere man of 40, so hard hit, was likely to do or say. The turn of mind of the generation of Frenchmen grown up during the years of his exile was almost unintelligible to him. Their sentiments appeared to him unduly violent, lacking fineness and measure, their language needlessly exaggerated. He joined calmly the general on the road, and they made a few steps in silence, the general trying to master his agitation and get proper control of his voice. It is perfectly true. I forgot something. I forgot till half an hour ago that I had an urgent affair of honor on my hands. It's incredible, but it is so. All was still for a moment. Then in the profound evening silence of the countryside the clear, aged voice of the Chevalier was heard trembling slightly, colon monsieur. That's an indignity. It was his first thought. The girl born during his exile, the posthumous daughter of his poor brother murdered by a band of Jacobins, had grown since his return very dear to his old heart, which had been starving on mere memories of affection for so many years. It is an inconceivable thing, I say. A man settles such affairs before he thinks of asking for a young girl's hand. Why? If you had forgotten for 10 days longer, you would have been married before your memory returned to you. In my time men did not forget such things, nor yet what is due to the feelings of an innocent young woman. If I did not respect them myself, I would qualify your conduct in a way which you would not like. General Dubert relieved himself frankly by a groan. Don't let that consideration prevent you. You run no risk of offending her mortally. But the old man paid no attention to this lover's nonsense. It's doubtful whether he even heard. What is it? He asked. What's the nature of? All it a youthful folly, Monsieur Le Chevalier. An inconceivable, incredible result of. He stopped short. He will never believe the story, he thought. He will only think I am taking him for a fool, and get offended. General Dubert spoke up again, colon yes, originating in youthful folly, it has become. The Chevalier interrupted, colon well, then it must be arranged. Arranged? Yes, no matter at what cost to your amour proper. You should have remembered you were engaged. You forgot that too, I suppose. And then you go, and forget your quarrel. It's the most hopeless exhibition of levity I ever heard of. Good heavens, monsieur. You don't imagine I have been picking up this quarrel last time I was in Paris, or anything of the sort, do you? What matters the precise date of your insane conduct, exclaimed the Chevalier, testily. The principal thing is to arrange it. Noticing General Dubert getting restive, and trying to place a word, the old emigre raised his hand, and added with dignity, I've been a soldier too. I would never dare suggest a doubtful step to the man whose name my niece is to bear. I tell you that enter gallant arms and affair can always be arranged. But so period, Monsieur Le Chevalier, it's 15 or 16 years ago. I was a lieutenant of hussars then. The old Chevalier seemed confounded by the vehemently despairing tone of this information. "You were a lieutenant of Hussars 16 years ago," he mumbled in a dazed manner. "Why, yes. You did not suppose I was made a general in my cradle like a royal prince." In the deepening purple twilight of the field spread. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.